Our final speaker today is Dr. Stephen Schandelmeyer. He's a professor of pharmaceutical economics and an endowed chair at the University of Minnesota. He's also the director of the Prime Institute, which focuses on pharmaceutical research related to management and economics. He's conducted research for the Food and Drug Administration, the Congressional Office of Technology Assessment, the U.S. General Accounting Office, and the U.S. Senate Special Committee on Aging. He's published 40 articles, scientific articles on prescription drugs. He's published over 85 reports and book chapters, and according to my count, he's given 398 invited addresses all over the country. And according to my count, he's testified before Congress at least 16 times, but I might have missed a couple as I was going through his resume. He's consulted with 7 states on senior drug programs, including Indiana, Iowa, Maine, Massachusetts, Minnesota, Pennsylvania, and Vermont. He's worked with 14 countries around the world, including Brazil, Canada, England, France, Mexico, South Korea, Spain, Taiwan, and Thailand. Now, after reading this CV, I actually was expecting somebody with more gray hair, not someone born the same year that I was. So I kind of wondered how a person could be this productive. You know, was there some mysterious prescription drug that I didn't know about? So I did a little research, and I talked to the person who I thought would be most likely to know, his secretary, and she said, well, you know, he works around the clock. But she credited 3 substances. So I wondered if you could verify this, Dr. Schandelmeyer. She said you run on Diet Dr. Pepper, cookies, and candy. Is that true? Oh. So I tell you, I brought along a Diet Dr. Pepper for you. This is one of my husband's famous chocolate chip cookies. And I have a little piece of Dove chocolate, because you've got to stay perky today. We've got a big day planned for you. Okay. And let me remind everyone in the audience that you can get your own piece of Dove chocolate to keep you perky today if you fill out your evaluation and pick up your Dove chocolate on the way out. So Dr. Schandelmeyer's talk today is the new state programs that have emerged after Mr. Hansen's report was written. So he's discussing emerging state efforts to provide affordable drugs, a range of options. Is our technology ready? Okay, we checked in his briefcase. He does have chocolate in his briefcase.
Well, we'll see if the tools work. In many ways, I'm going to cover the same kinds of topics that Dr. Hansen covered, but I'll talk about the newer state efforts to provide drug assistance for various populations within their state. And as you know, I'm sure there's been a lot of activity in the last year or two with respect to prescription drugs and concerns about prescription drug prices. What are the issues that we need to deal with, look at? First, I'll talk a little bit about politics and public expectations. Then I'll talk about targeting the source of the problem, because as legislators and people involved in public policy, you well know that you may see a problem out there and you may throw a solution at it, but if you haven't figured out what's causing the problem in the first place, you're going to cause all kinds of other consequences that were not intended. Then I'll talk about approaches to the problem and what have we seen states do. I'll remind us of some of the things that John Hansen went over that we've seen states in the past do, but I'll focus primarily on, in contrast, the new things that states have talked about or have been doing in the last year or so. And then I'll bring us down to the question, what should Wisconsin do? And I won't tell you the answer, but I'll tell you all the questions I can think of. At this point, I think I've heard most of the questions. I have worked with many states in the last couple of years very directly, legislatures, with governor's offices, with state agencies across the country, and I've worked with Republicans and Democrats and with all kinds of approaches that are out there in terms of addressing this solution. First, we need to be aware of the politics and public expectation issues. As you well know, everybody who ran for office in the last election cycle, from dog catcher up to president, promised to do something about prescription drugs. And primarily for the elderly is where the pressure of focus has come from. I think that puts a lot of pressure on all politicians before their next election cycle. I think we will see, and this is not just the elderly concerned about drugs and prices, it's the children of those elderly who are having to help mom and dad pay for their drugs or figure out how to pay for drugs in some cases. So it's a much broader issue than just the elderly. And I think, just flip that over. And I think politicians will have to show that they've done something before the next election cycle, or it may affect who gets back in office in that round. So I think there will be pressure both federally and at the state levels in terms of what have you done to help address this problem. First, I'll remind us, I don't want to spend a lot of time because you had a whole session on the need. But let me ask, is there anybody here who has never been sick a day in your life? Honestly, anybody? Raise your hand. No. Okay. Is there anyone here who has never needed or used a prescription drug? No. The point is, prescription drugs have a universal demand. We're not talking about a few people. We're not talking about just the elderly. Every person in society either has used, will use, or would need to use prescription drugs. This is a universal need in society and a universal issue that we need to consider. So this is not isolated to just the elderly, even though that's where the pressure and focus comes from. Drugs are the most widely used form of health care. 64% of the population use one or more drugs in a given year. 83% of the elderly use one or more drugs in a given year. So virtually everyone needs, has used, or will use drugs in their lifetime. Now next we go to this issue of targeting the source of the problem. Before I get into giving you solutions and what states have done, I want to quickly talk about an assessment of the problem source. The nature of the problem, drug expenditure growth, whether we're talking about Medicaid or an individual elderly person out of pocket or an employer group paying for their employees or retirees, no matter who we're talking about, we've seen 15 to 20% growth in drug expenditures for the last 5 or 6 years. That's far faster than our rapidly growing economy has been growing. And so all payers are beginning to say, hey, this is squeezing more and more things out of my budget, other things out of my budget. We need value prescription drugs, but we have to find a way to manage this. We have to deal with this issue, whether it's states, employers, or individuals, or federal government. We've got to deal with it. There are many individuals still without prescription drug insurance. About 35% do not have any insurance among the elderly, and another third of the elderly only have partial coverage that may only cover them up to a certain level, but they certainly don't have catastrophic coverage if they come down with a very debilitating chronic illness that has extremely high costs. They would not have complete coverage even at that point. Some individuals then do not get drugs that they need because of these problems. And this, again, is not just limited to the elderly, but they are one of the major populations affected by this. What are the sources of the problem? First of all, the prescription market is not a normal economic market. Now, I don't say that. That's a fact. It's not the problem per se, but we have to realize that it is not a free market in the sense that you can walk in and buy any prescription you want, and you can say, no, I want to bargain with the price with the pharmacist, because the pharmacist really doesn't set most of the price. It's set by the manufacturer. You, as an individual, have no bargaining power over price. Even physicians, really, who make the choice of the drug, usually don't know price and don't take price into consideration in the choice. So it's a market that doesn't incorporate price into the decision-making process in the way other markets do. And structurally, it's a market that for certain reasons that have appropriate policy, but they need to be balanced, we award patents and monopolies to the innovators. And I'm not opposing that, but we need to look at the impact and how do we balance that with making it a market and making wise choices on the appropriate price in the market. Also, it's a market that a large share of the population, 2/3 of the population, does have drug insurance coverage, either by employer or 15% of the population get it through Medicaid. And that leads to overuse, underuse, inappropriate use. So not all increases in drug use are necessarily good. Some cause more problems. Some solve more problems. We have to realize that just increasing the use or access alone without looking at appropriateness doesn't solve the problem. And then prices are an issue. The prices for a cash-paying customer are higher than the prices for a managed care plan or higher than in other countries, the prices. Also, we see prices increasing at 2 to 3 times the rate of inflation in society. Now, I looked at Wisconsin Medicaid from the last 5 years that I had data, 93 to 98, and looked at what are the factors contributing to the increase in drug expenditures in Wisconsin Medicaid. And we can divide it into recipients. Actually, in that time period, your total number of recipients decreased by about 35%. the utilization, that is prescriptions per person per year, went up by about 43%. The average payment per prescription went up 35.8%, but we can break that down into the increase in drug product cost at the manufacturer level and the increase in the pharmacist dispensing fees. The manufacturer's prices and product costs went up 46.7%. The pharmacist fees actually went down 7.7%. Now, what are the sources of the problem here? Increased use and manufacturer prices rising. Controlling pharmacist fees aren't the problem, and we've done that, and it hasn't solved the problem. So to keep aiming there isn't going to bring you solutions on this problem. These are adjusted for inflation, which was 12.7% in this time period. This just shows you quickly the average cost of a prescription in Wisconsin Medicaid over time. And again, the red part is the manufacturer's product component. The pharmacy fees, the blue part at the bottom, and this is in constant dollars. Pharmacists actually make less today than they did 20 years ago for filling prescriptions. Manufacturers have had a growing portion of the average prescription price that goes up. The last component here I want to talk about is old versus new drugs. The new drugs coming on the market cost much more than the older drugs. The drugs that have been on the market since 95 and before averaged about a dollar per day of therapy. The drugs coming on the market in the last 5 years have doubled or tripled the cost per day of therapy. Now, manufacturers' cost structures have gone up. They spend more on R&D, but it doesn't explain this much increase in prices. So there are some issues of new price levels that need to be evaluated or considered. And just to put in perspective, recent changes in prices, January 2001 versus January 2000, the drug Axit has increased 13.4%. The drug Pepcid, 9.2%. That's enough to give you ulcers, even if you use the drug. Premarin has gone up 12.3%. Relafen has gone up 12.3%. Dapro, 9.9%. And Claritin, the most heavily direct-to-consumer advertised drug, has gone up only 8.8%, but they've increased the price four times in the last year. Normally, drugs only go up once a year or every 10 months or thereabouts. So we've seen some rapid and a spike of increased prices in drugs again. And notice most of these are drugs used by the elderly. And I've seen the spike in increased prices more pronounced in the elderly drugs than in other drugs in the population. It gets down to, doctor, how sick am I in dollars and cents? And this is a question many patients ask their doctor frequently. Access is a concern not just for the elderly. It's a concern for all uninsured and underinsured. And that includes many others. It includes disabled as well as the elderly. It includes persons with catastrophic illnesses like AIDS or Gaucher's disease, multiple sclerosis. It includes low-wage families and children. The person working two minimum wage jobs at Burger King and McDonald's doesn't have health insurance and can't afford anything, and they make too much for Medicaid. It includes undocumented aliens and homeless, and there are other populations. And if you do something only for the elderly, it's likely to increase the cost for the few left in the cash pay side of the market. So be wise and be careful with what you do. So what are the approaches to solving the problem that we've seen out there, we're seeing states do? First, who can and will address the problem? And here we have the issue. Many of these problems could probably be best addressed by the federal government. But there's been much talk and little action by the federal government for 5 to 8 years. Certainly the intensity is growing in Washington. I think most people would acknowledge that. The certainty, though, of something passing this year, it's growing, but it's not highly probable. There is an increased likelihood of action in the next 2 years. I think, again, before the next election cycle and before the House comes up and part of the Senate, there may be pressure to do something. And if it doesn't happen then, we may see different people in Congress and something happen the year or two after that. I think we will see action within the next 4 years at a minimum, but my guess is a year and a half out at the earliest. Even if they pass something this fall, it would take 1 to 2 years for a federal program to be implemented. Then there is issue of state government action. States have been leading the way. We already have 20-plus states with programs and another 10 or 12 or 15 states with active bills that are likely to be passed in the next year. Actually, if we look at history, Medicaid and Medicare came from having many states cover drugs for the poor and for the elderly. Medicaid came about as a federal program because we had 35 plus states already doing something. And finally, the federal government and Congress said, maybe we should organize a coordinated program here. I think we're going to see the same with the elderly. We're already at this threshold of 20, 25 states doing something. I think by the end of this year or by the end of next year, we'll have 35 states with plans in place. And so there will be multi-state action, and then the feds will say, okay, let's coordinate this and put our stamp on it and make it look like we did something too. Federal program is likely to have, even if there is a federal program, likely to have state implementation. Again, the Medicaid program is a federal program, but it's also a state program. And I think we're likely to see whatever happens for the elderly have significant state implementation. So if you put something in place, even if Congress passes something in a year or two or three or four, you can transition what you have in place to align with the federal program, but you're ahead of the game, and then you're not behind the implementation curve and delayed or lagged in terms of getting something in place. Also, states, by giving states first taking the action first and then having a federal program that has state flexibility, we get more innovation. States have shown us the way of new things to do, and so that's, I want to talk a few minutes about those new things. I think states can get a program up and running within 6 months to a year, faster than the federal program could run. Also, there is the opportunity for multi-state programs. The New England states of Vermont, Maine, and Massachusetts, and maybe others are considering, actually they already have a request for proposal out for a tri-state program, and they're open to other states joining them. I think there may be an impetus and a desire in some Midwest states to enter into a program. Iowa has a new innovative program I'll talk about in a minute, and they're willing to collaborate. I think Minnesota, South Dakota, maybe Wisconsin, others could join in a program. It's a possibility. It gives you increased leverage, shared administrative costs. There are two basic approaches to providing access, as we've heard. One is subsidized payment. That is somebody paying part of the cost for people who have trouble with access. More people can be covered, but there's also much more cost to these programs. Major source of funding is required to pull this program off. You got to take it from somewhere. High subsidization, though, also leads to overuse or inappropriate use patterns, and you will have to manage those. So you must manage both price and use to hold down costs and expenditures if you go into a subsidization program. The second approach is not to subsidize, but just focus only on managing price and use without subsidizing. Let the consumer still pay the full price, but try to help consumers get lower price in the market and manage their use or assure appropriate use. Here you can have more people covered for the same or marginal added costs versus what it'll cost you to run a subsidy program. More people can be covered for the same dollars than with a subsidy program under a discount or managed price and use program. The goal of lower expenditures can be achieved with equal or higher quality in this approach. And you can use market-based or regulatory approaches. These are somewhat in contrast, and I'll talk briefly about those. So how do you fund a drug assistance program? John Hansen talked briefly about the established programs have used general revenue, lottery funds, enrollee fees, and cost sharing. The newer programs are looking at tobacco settlement funds, discounts and rebates of manufacturers, tax credits and deductions, and other options. What are the state strategies you can use to increase access? One, you can be state as regulator. Maine enacted a law where the state was going to set the prices. Vermont seriously considered one, and they got sidetracked with the union bill that they got into. But that's the state acting as a regulator price controller. Essentially, this is a utility rate regulation model. Drugs are a public good, and remember we said there is a monopoly and there is universal demand, so some of the elements of drugs as a public good are there. Second approach is a state as a wholesaler. Many European countries have the state that owns the pharmacies and the wholesalers and are the buyers from manufacturers, monopsonistic buyers, much like our military models or the European models. Vermont seriously considered this, but it's largely untested in the U.S., although it's also much like liquor models, like we have, you know, liquor state-controlled liquor stores in many states, and so we can look at that model or similar models. Then there's state as a prudent purchaser. Here, Iowa plans to be a prudent purchaser without paying for the drugs for the elderly, but they're going to act as a buying co-op. Iowa knows about co-ops in the farm market, and they are developing a buying co-op that will involve consumers and the state will be a buyer. Also, essentially, PBMs, pharmacy benefit managers and managed care firms, are really prudent purchasers, and the state can use the same tools and mechanisms. This largely uses market-based competition, competitive bidding, and market share movement. Payment limits could also be applied here, setting rather than saying, here's the price you can charge, here's how much I'll pay for it. And if the consumer wants it, they have to pay any additional charge you want to charge. So if a drug manufacturer charges too high a price, the consumers may say, no, I don't want the drug that costs $150 a month. If my doctor agrees, I'll take the one that costs $30 a month. And so payment limits are different than setting price, but they can have a similar effect and yet leave a marketplace in place. Then there's the state as the subsidizer, and this is what most of the traditional programs have done. The PACE program in Pennsylvania, New Jersey, New York, those three programs, New Jersey, New York, and Pennsylvania, have accounted for more than half of all of the elderly covered in state programs, even though there are a lot of states. Also, there's been talk about, so this is a welfare program model and based on some criteria. There has been talk about state as importers. States like Vermont, South Dakota are considering allowing importation from Canada because the drug prices are truly lower cost in Canada. You happen to be a border state too. It's an option here, but it has some legal barriers and concerns. I'm getting signs to quit, so I'm going to go to a couple of summary slides, and then we can talk about who's covered, all persons, uninsured, not insured. You can be means tested, age, disabled, low income, families and children, which drugs are covered, and John talked about that. So at this point, what should Wisconsin do? There are many alternatives out there. First, what have we learned from the states that are out there and what they've done? First, the source of growth is price and use issues. Inappropriate use and high or growing prices are the problem. And that problem is largely at the manufacturer level, not the retail pharmacy level. That has been controlled in the past. It is still controlled in your Medicaid and by most private plans, and it is not the source of the current problem. It needs to be monitored and continued, but increasing the discount or squeezing pharmacy more isn't going to solve any of this problem. Volume does not lower price. That's one of those ways this is different than a normal market. What does lower price is market share movement. And so you have to be willing to switch to generics or to alternative brand names with the collaboration of the physician, pharmacist, and patient. Price controls do not flow upstream. Controlling what you pay the pharmacist won't squeeze the manufacturer's price. We know that from Maine. We know that from Medicaid programs. It simply does not work. So be careful where you aim price pressures. Pharmacy prices have been controlled, but drug manufacturers are not. Have not been. Control of pharmacy prices will not control the prescription price. You must anticipate the behavior of all players in the market. Even though you're aiming at one, you have to look at how is everybody affected and what will their behaviors be, what will the net result be. And that all behaviors includes patients, drug firms, physicians, pharmacists, and others, the PBMs and managed care. Historically, these programs, though, have had low enrollment. So you need to be innovative and look for ways to encourage recruitment and enrollment in your program. Most states have less than 5, even less than 3% of the elderly in their state enrolled in these programs, so they haven't reached a lot of people. What choices do you have to make? Are you going to provide a little bit for a lot of people or a lot for a few people? And remember, helping a few is likely to cost the others who you do not help because they'll see their prices go up at the manufacturer level to counterbalance the squeeze that's put on by these programs. Second, are you going to go with a subsidy program or a use and price management program or a combination? Who bears the burden? Is it the manufacturer, the pharmacist, the patient, the state? What mix of those will you use? They probably all will be a part of the solution. Are you going to go with a tried and true approach, the traditional subsidy program like Pennsylvania, New York, New Jersey? Or are you going to go with an innovative approach like Iowa and this co-op buying with no subsidy? Are you going to go for quick implementation versus greater impact? In general, the programs you can implement quickly will have less impact. The programs that will have the most impact take longer to implement. Or you could implement a phase-in, a quick, moderate impact, and then phase into more impact over time. And then finally, are you going to go with a single-state effort or a multi-state effort? I think something can be done. We're seeing states come up with very creative and innovative solutions, but it will require a coordinated effort, and we must all work hard and pull together in the same direction to see action take place. But I think we can see something done. Thank you.
What do you specifically know about the Nevada plan, which gives $580 worth of prescription benefits to each senior citizen?
Nevada is not one of the states I've worked with. I don't know the exact details of the Nevada plan. John may be able to answer that for us.
As I understand it, the Nevada plan had a request for a proposal. They awarded the contract to a PBM. They only have about 1,200 people who have applied for the program. I don't even think that many are enrolled. If you want more details about what they have done, one of their state legislators testified before the House Energy and Commerce Committee week before last. You can go to their website. You can access her statement. Essentially, what she said about that program was, she didn't think it was off to a very good start. She was one of the principal movers behind creating that program in Nevada. But she had some real concerns about what it was, the direction that program was going. But you can get a complete, on the internet, you can get a complete understanding of what they're doing.
In Nevada, it appears to be a subsidy program. And what you must keep in mind, if you enact a subsidy program and don't deal with the issues of price and utilization, it's almost the same as writing a blank check, because it will continue to grow at these 15 to 20% growth rates. And I don't think your budget can afford a subsidy program that's growing at 15 to 20% a year without some management and control. So you're going to have to deal with price and use whether you enact a subsidy or whether you don't enact a subsidy. You need to keep that in mind. Other questions?
One more quick question.
Is the federal government looking at the patenting process, which I understand is a big part of the problem?
There are some looking at it, but it's largely members of Congress. It's not the administration. And with the present administration, I don't think it's highly likely. And I would say, even though there may be evaluation and potential reform in the long run of that, that will come after we have drug coverage for the elderly under Medicare. It's an issue, but it's not as far along as an issue as covering drugs in the first place. I think it's an issue that needs evaluation and needs some effort, but I think it's further down the list in terms of policy priorities than drug coverage per se. The two are tied together. It would be helpful, but it's not likely that that will come first.